ask you, you're from Brooklyn, aren't you?
Yeah, we're all originally from Brooklyn, me and my bandmates, and we actually currently reside upstate, so basically come down here to work and do shows and things like that, and then migrate back up to the beautiful countryside.
Yeah, it says here Germantown. What's in Germantown for you?
Not much. It's precisely why I love it so much. There's one traffic light, and a really cool little country store that everybody loves called Otto's, and that's about it. Yeah, that's the extent of it. But the community is filled with artists. Our neighbors are mostly painters and herbal gardeners and Brooklyn migrants, actually, most of them, like myself.
Interesting. I know at least one artist who did that migration from New York to the Hudson Valley. Jack Grace, actually, by name. You probably know who he is.
Not offhand. Where did he move to?
He is in Woodstock.
Okay. Hudson is another town that's really up and coming with a lot more Brooklynites headed that way.
Speaking of, do you guys collaborate with any of the other artists in the area, like in the John Street Jam or the Midnight Ramble?
Oh my gosh, that's funny. I've done the John Street twice.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it was really a thrill to do it, and I'm looking forward to doing it again. There's also a kind of a secret venue in Rhinecliff, run by this Russian guy, Richard Karpinski, we're doing that in a couple weeks. It's a place called the Morton Library. It's a totally acoustic, no microphone. It's literally an old library that they converted into a performance space. It's all wood. Incredible acoustics, and they usually get a good crowd, very attentive, engaged kind of audience, which is really nice, just get up there and you can hear a pin drop, it's really nice.
Well, that's excellent.
Yeah. So we'll do that. And that's the kind of venue that, is ideal. We bring around amps, very little Fishmans, but we've really geared our music to, work within a much smaller sonic frame. That most of us come from heavier, alt rock backgrounds.
Right.
It's really been a learning experience. Just kind of less is more. Really appreciating, minimalists or whatever. Just sort of. The sound of nothing.
Nothing, huh?
Well, learning how to, not feel like you have to turn up or you have to add things or you have to put more in the mix, it's definitely an art form to learn how to play that way,
So now I think I understand when I see your music on Bandcamp, I see you tag the word folk. And I know from Anti-Folk, obviously if from New York and you've played at Sidewalk or Cake Shop and such, that scene, at least among the people, if not the approach. And, I can see why that fits. And of course your music, of course there's that, I can hear it as well. And how that comes across.
Yeah. Anti-Folk is a really funny thing. One day, somebody said oh yeah, you're Anti-Folk. And I heard the word and I thought, I kind of like the sound of that. I don't like the anti. It has sort of a negative connotation. But then when I saw who I was grouped with, I was like, oh yeah, I'm Anti-Folk. The kinds of artists that I really admired were all, thrown right in there. And like you said, like the Sidewalk Cafe Latch's scene down there. I think he actually moved and has started, there was a pre-existing scene in Edinburgh, and he's over there in England, and I think they do an anti-folk festival in Edinburgh.
Is that right? I had no idea he was He was out of the country. He's left. Wow.
Right, I know. It's like he was such a fixture in like 20 years at least, right?
Right.
Ben has been running it for a couple of years now. He's doing a great job with it. The whole idea of not letting the phrasing and lyrics sort of pave the way for a song, and that approach is just the way I've always written since I started writing on my own on acoustic. And I think initially it felt kind of uncomfortable that's just the way it really worked, you know, for me. And then trying to get other musicians to play along, you know, was a little tricky at first. But then, you know, you get more confidence, especially when you see that there's an actual scene, you know, like of other musicians that are doing it precisely the same thing, you know.
I had recognized that you had two musicians who I knew by name because I've seen their names in the liner notes of enough albums that I have here, including Daniel Weintraub, more prominently a little bit. And I discovered...
He'll be happy to hear that.
Yeah. And I discovered that they're also half of the band Tallulah.
That's true. I'm in competition with those guys, so let's keep the focus over here, shall we, Dan?
We shall, yes.
I'm kidding. Like, they they have gigs and they have rehearsals and there's two of them and one of me, so.
Right. Right. But between you, you must have a whole a whole studio full of instruments at your disposal from what I've seen you use on the last album. So how do you know which instruments to use on what song?
Oh boy, that's on them, and they really do a great job managing it. It's like a bag of tricks. They musical chairs, no pun intended, because frequently they'll be switching. One song Jason will play a slide guitar, and the next song he'll be playing Moog, and you know, it just goes on and on. We like to all, you know, we go through the litany of instruments and they're all, you know, really more or less acoustic other than the Moog, I guess, but, we always add on triangle at the end of the list, you know, cause that's a key component to our arsenal. Daniel plays triangle on Muhlenbergia Capillaris. It's a song we'll be doing here today, actually.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. How's the scene there today?
It's good. We got a nice group of people. The house has got a lot going on. People coming and going. There's a little crowd listening to music downstairs, and some other people on the second floor demonstrating wares and hanging out on the third floor. It's a really beautiful space she's got. You know.
It is. I've taken part in two conferences, but this is the second time I'm actually missing it, but doing the online thing. So,
I'm looking out into the backyard garden. There's some people, looks like they're doing an interview out there.
Oh, wow. Sure. Yeah. Very nice. You know, there's this one song, actually two songs I really like from what I've heard, On the Sort of Beautiful.
On the Sort of Beautiful, yeah.
I guess I'm just asking about your thoughts behind writing that song.
Okay. Well, that's easy enough. I was going through a whole phase of really just coming to terms with how should I put this? You know, of giving up a life of fast living, you know, and not totally a choice, you know, a really happy choice, you know, and just sort of understanding the payoff for pushing things too far, and or the blowback, however you want to, the payback, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, I'm not making any judgment, putting such a high priority on euphoria, or a euphoric experience, you know, any type of euphoric experience. It's definitely got a, there's an edge, another side to that. And, you know, sort of learning how, the life of, I don't know, how should we say, you know, not as much of the uber buzz, you know, the hyper, just a little, you know, I don't get to experience those things as much anymore. Sure. I have a more committed, more productive life as a result, you know, I think, too, and probably as an artist, you know, just more consistent, you know, cause if you're always waiting for that next hit, you know, you get the big hit and then, you know, you gotta wait until the next time it strikes and people are always asking, you know, do you need to be high or does it make you write better? And I was like, well, you know, I've written high and I've written straight and, both work, you know, I just choose, the latter these days because, I don't like the other side effects, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's it.
Now my favorite lines from what I've written so far is from the, this song, Cardboard Figures. Where you say, oh, I love the way the mailroom smells and everyone just helps themselves to cattle feed and aquavelve while I make them pictures. That's totally off the wall to me, but I know there's a purpose there someplace and, but I know you do paint a good picture and of course half of it really is from your voice too. Which, it's really different.
Oh, thanks. I do rely on my voice. It's definitely got me through. And if it wasn't for it, I probably never would have entered music. I just thought you had to be a Mick Jagger or something. And then, I found out I could do things that he couldn't. And people seem to like it. But that song, you know, you paint a picture. It's actually inspired by Jane Castle, who's a deaf and dumb, deaf mute, painter, who, almost went, completely missed were it not for a art collector, I guess, a guy worked at a museum in Philadelphia, noticed his work and, he's living in Boise, Idaho, and his work is just amazing, really beautiful. Think about the fact that he was, you know, deaf mute his entire life, and what he went through, and staggering amount of work, and just unbelievably creative, stuff. If you get a chance to check it out, it's really interesting. Working with amongst other things, cardboard that his family actually owned. A mail room, you know, that was only open a few days a week in this small town outside of Boise. And so that's where that lyric comes from. He would gather up the leftover cardboard and whatnot, the things that people left behind and use them as an integral part to his work. If you go to the Bandcamp page, you'll see a big, you know, when you go to that song, you'll see a big picture of him right next to the song, if you pull up the song. But the thing about James Castle that is really wonderful is his family treated him not like an invalid, but like a person whose job it was to create things. And when he took that upon himself, they encouraged that. So they all got up at 5 and milked the cows, literally, and take care of, you know, their odd jobs that they had to do to support themselves. And James went to the shed and created artwork. And, they didn't try to change that. They supported it. And in fact, when he finally saw some success before he died, they took his money and they bought him a house, they built him a house on their property.
Okay.
For him to keep it up. Yeah. So he had a really, really great, support from his family.
That's tremendous. I will look that name up, I promise. A couple more questions for you. Back to you guys. When are your next shows?
Well, as I just mentioned, we're doing the show in Rhinecliff. That's on the 16th. That's a Friday. at the Morton Library in Rhinecliffe. That's an evening show. I'm guessing you should probably get there around 7. General admission, and should be a really nice crowd. So. After that, we're going down to D.C. again, doing another house concert. We're trying to do more and more house concerts these days, and not, doing like the typical venue bar scene. We really feel like we enjoy and just have a much better time, and and actually make a little money doing house concerts for people that we already know love having us. You know, we're not competing for their attention with bars or a lot of chatter.
Right, and diminishing returns for the work and the investment. So.
That's a marvel. I know that's a slowly growing trend, at least here in the States. This type of concerts, and I wish you well with that.
Yeah, thanks.
Just seeing your blog, obviously you've blogged about your fascination, I suppose, with rooftops and gardens and things, but did you ever think of playing in such a setting?
Yeah, we'd love to do that. We're just sort of, the album is coming out. We just finished a couple of videos. And this whole thing about, the Brooklyn Garden Club really stems from, me deciding rather than, I'd for so long written about, relationships and girlfriends and shit like that, and I couldn't do it anymore, uh-huh. Really, there was nothing left to say, and uh-huh. And I'm in a happy relationship anyhow, so
right.
I started to somebody suggested I know a fair amount about the whole horticultural world, and that I start maybe looking at plants for inspiration, and I thought that was crazy, that's just like work to me. I'd been doing it my whole life, and then I realized I had this kind of complicated relationship with a lot of them, so it actually was really rife for inspiration. I mean, I really, it really worked out. So this whole group of songs, the majority of them are, have a botanical bent. So, it's just great. I mean, they're each one, they have these beautiful names, and then they find out the stories behind them, and a lot of them I already knew some of the stories, and a lot of them I already had feelings about, and it was easy to make the metaphor into life, camellia, for example. I propagated azaleas and camellias with my dad when I was very young.
Wow.
And I just assumed that everybody had this terrible, dad has me, working with this stuff, and then I grew up and I'm still working with them, and I find out that camellias actually, they were almost, it was like a genocidal winter in the botanic gardens in Washington DC. They were almost all completely wiped out. They had just introduced them into the US. This is about 25 years ago, and all except for a handful of them survived. And out of that handful, they were the hardiest species. And so that cultivar became the camellia that we see all over the Northeast today. Huh. So it was just a great, like that experience became translated to my own experience with, difficulty, just life stuff. And so I was like, this is a great story. And I just turned it into a song,
I can dig that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this has been fun. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I appreciate the invitation, and I will definitely mention to my compadres that you brought up Tallulah and how much you'd love to see the Brooklyn Garden Club perform and maybe have Tallulah open.
That might work, or maybe even play here in Philly where I'm at.
Oh, Wonderful. I played the Tin Angel before. Maybe get down there again and we can look you up.
Yeah, well, there's a whole scene besides the venues. There's other places. There's, you know, the occasional house parties. There's First Friday. Well, we'll talk about that at some point. There's a whole scene here. It's much like New York, but more of an underground sense.
Yeah, my nephew's an extraordinary guitar player, a young kid, Robin Kareen, is down there, and he does all kinds of, you know, he's got a warehouse and parties and stuff going on that he invites musicians to. So yeah, I've heard about it. Now I need to get down there and experience it. So I'll take you up on that.